HRN is offering complimentary business memberships to 50 Black, Indigenous, people of color-owned food businesses this summer. The deadline to apply is July 31st. Each business membership, a $500 value, is an advertising opportunity that will allow businesses disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 to connect with HRN's listening community and promote their work. To apply and review the terms and conditions, go to heritageradionetwork.org/BIZ.
This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to your customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/yfood. Hello and welcome to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers. I'm your co-host, Ethan Frisch.
And I'm your co-host, Valerie Lomas.
And we are really excited to just jump right in with our guest for this week. Jennifer Crawford is a food creative, the winner of MasterChef Canada, the host of the My Queer Kitchen series with Extra Magazine, and an all-around fascinating food person, and I'm really excited you're joining us this week. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. That was quite an intro.
So Jennifer, let's start with a little bit of background. Who are you and how did you wind up in the place in the food world that you occupy today?
Oh, wow. What
what Sorry, a journey. Good question.
Yeah. I think this question is exactly why I wanted to write a book, which is a thing that I'm doing as well. My name is Jennifer Crawford, and I grew up in Kingston, Nova Scotia, which is a really kind of rural part of the Annapolis Valley. I went to school for a really long time. I thought I was going to be a professor. I decided halfway through my PhD that I didn't want to do that. And then I got into government, which I worked, well, I worked in up until food world times. But I did spend many an afternoon at my desk reading about how to have a successful food blog and listening to food podcasts, literally about career changers. So this feels like such a full circle moment for me. So just thanks for having me. And I feel really grateful to contribute.
Well, it's great to have you on. And you rose to sort of prominence as part of MasterChef. Mm-hmm. What was that journey like? And you took elements of Canadian cuisine. Can I say Canadian cuisine? Is that a thing? You took elements of Canadian cuisine and presented them in ways that I think they hadn't really been presented on TV before.
Yeah, of course. I think Canadian cuisine is totally a thing. And also it's so specifically regional, where I come from, right? Nova Scotia, there's so many beautiful products related to the ocean and the Annapolis Valley. Just, I don't know. I feel right now, I'm living at a salad bar, just walking around outside all of the lovely things that are here. That whole year leading up to MasterChef was such a trip that MasterChef it was a long rambling sentence where MasterChef was the exclamation point, because I was still at my government job up until May of that year. It was in February that I hit bottom with my PTSD and alcoholism and started seeking treatment and, getting the support that I needed. And then in the summer, I was admitted to a treatment program at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, which is a hospital in Toronto. They're amazing. I did a 9-week outpatient program there. I had about 6 months of sobriety before I went to that. And I was kind of at this point where I was how much could treatment really help me? I'm doing so good right now. And so much of that was doing so much baking after work and stuff. But then, once I did the 9 weeks of treatment, I was this is how good it can get. And then 2 weeks later, went to film MasterChef, won it. just got to practice all of my distress tolerance skills that I had just learned for 9 weeks straight. It was a really good test to see what stuck, and most of it did, thankfully.
I love how you summed it up with one it, like two words. Can you give us a little bit more? I mean, yeah. You won. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Can you make us hungry? What did you cook? Tell us something exciting you cooked.
Oh my gosh. Well, before I even got there, I knew what I wanted to cook in the finale. I was really specifically careful about taking it one day at a time while I was there, because there's nothing knowable about any day when you're recording a reality show. It is such a trip. And sometimes I would be just taking it like 10 minutes at a time. And honestly, like, I had so much fun while I was there that my brain just kept making up ideas. My finale dishes were, they were childhood inspired. That started with ants on a log, which was like a blue cheese mousse, port poach figs. What else was on there? Toasted walnuts, celery brunoise, like this really lovely celery vinaigrette. If you've had ants on a log, it's like that times a zillion. And then Mary's little lamb, which was like this really gorgeous lamb shank with mint fleece and hay smoked oats. Sorry, I'm like drooling slash like I haven't made this since I was there.
it's so playful. I love the kind of like playful nature to it.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, then like for my dessert, I got to make, like, while I was there, just time was so short. I ate so much Captain Crunch at the end of every day that I paid homage to that by doing a treat cereal as the dessert with like a chocolate soil and tea smoked milk, homemade meringues, like a sugar cured yolk, chocolate ganache. Ooh, it felt like playtime. And having all the people who had supported me kind of through that whole year, who had seen me from kind of like rock bottom total mess to like getting to do my thing and having so much fun all together doing it, it was the best.
Those are a lot of really complicated, very specific techniques. How did you learn to do all of that?
I'm self-taught in the kitchen, and I've been cooking for a really long time. Like when I was in my government job, there was parts about it that I liked, but honestly, I thought of it as like, wow, this is funding my enthusiasm for food. Because honestly, I had never had disposable income before. Like, I just had never experienced that. So it felt so luxurious to be able to, buy cheese regularly, or like buy a nice cut of meat and like not worry if I messed it up too much. I mean, like, you never want to mess up a cut of meat, but like, I had never been at a point where something like that kind of wouldn't like make or break me, I guess. So for those years that I was working in government, I was like cooking like before work, after work, just as a way to kind of stay well, basically. I mean, like, spoiler alert, it didn't work entirely. Like, I got really focused on my bourbon collection near the end, which did not work out. But like for a time there, it was really, really special. It felt kind of like self-led culinary school. And I had the chance to do like some stages on the weekend, at a local butcher who was really nice to me. And I don't know, I just really love learning and I really love eating. So that just, it's like the accumulated efforts of like almost four decades of that.
I love that you're like kind of describing this whole like way of just taking care of yourself through food. And, or maybe showing yourself love, a way to show yourself some love. And I feel like you can do that. And like, yes, you know, life still happens and we still make mistakes and we still screw up, but it doesn't mean that like you didn't show yourself that love in that moment.
Yes. Like I was, well, it's like that saying, like you do the best with what you have, kind of. Like I was doing the best with like the skills that I had at the time. And it just turns out the stuff that I was dealing with like needed a lot more than like just me. Like I couldn't do it myself. Like there was some healing where like I'm not an expert in it and I'd never learned those skills. So Like, I mean, I did what I could with what I had, which was mostly like butter, flour, and sugar and eggs for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
I also love that, like, when you were describing the food you were making, it just has this element of fun and whimsy. And now that you've, you know, now that this is your job and you're writing a book, do you still feel that fun? And are we going to get to see some of that fun in the book you're working on?
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Sorry. I'm like jaw dropped. Like, I'm so happy when that stuff comes across, because a huge part of food for me is related to kind of stuff that I learned in treatment around joy amplification. It's that feeling of seizing on the little moments that make you happy and taking everything you have to like make them even bigger, so that way they stick. Because you know when something awful happens to you, and or even just like, I don't know, minorly upsetting, like you get an email that's distressing and then you ruminate on it all day. Like, the idea is taking those moments that are joyful and figuring out ways to make them just as sticky. And food is my main way of doing that. And you likely won't see a lot of that in this book, actually.
Really?
I think
it might not be as direct. I bet like it might be a little bit more just like the undertone, because I feel like that's just your nature.
Oh, thanks. Well, I think like a lot of the book will be like here, like it's almost like a really long-winded explanation of like, here's why this stuff is so important to me. And like, if you're feeling like there is not a lot of joy to be had right now, like I feel that too. Like, I have been there. It can get really dark. I mean, there was eras of my life where I could barely create a way out of bed, let alone like a whole meal. Mm-hmm. And like being able to be open about that stuff helps keep me well, and helps keep me being able to make and do the things that I do now. And if I can kind of, I don't know, help someone along that journey too, that's, I don't know. Yeah, that's the best part of it.
Could you also tell us a little bit about the ways that your gender identity interacts with your food philosophy or your food aesthetic?
Oh, sure. Gender is one of those things that just kind of always felt like something we just made up. Like, even when I was a kid, I was like, why? Like, I don't get it. And I still kind of feel like that a bit sometimes, where I'm like, I just don't get it. And I think there's something about that where if you just know the rules don't really apply to you for whatever reason, it frees you up to do whatever you want. or like, that's how I feel anyway. Like, after, like, if I have a day of kind of like being misgendered a lot, whether like publicly or privately or whatever, like, cause that, I don't know, it happens. It's really soothing to like go make something that like shouldn't make any sense, but is really lovely. It's like kind of channeling those feelings of what being different into making food that's kind of different and having it be celebrated. It feels really special.
And then your creative process is also so special. At least, I mean, what I've seen on Instagram or the videos of yours that I've watched, the way that you kind of come up with a dish, could you walk us through that aspect of your creative process too?
Oh, thank you. I don't think I've been asked this before. This is really nice. I tend to start with a feeling. This is going to sound like a funny sentence, but I love the way feelings feel, and I love finding ways to like recreate them and make them stick and make them bigger. And I love working through those feelings through food. And I feel like it just opens up, like it has that sense of possibility, like anything could happen. Like, when you're starting with a feeling, like you're like, that could mean anything. Like, for me, it could mean something different for someone else. Like, it's like finding the things that like work for me, and then like when they do land with other people, like even if it's just like one other person, it's the best feeling. Yeah. Does yeah. that like yeah, I, no. I'm like, I realize I didn't even barely mention food, but that like food for me almost feels like this, like food is the conduit to like talking about feelings and healing and justice and all these things that I hold really dear.
I love that. And it's like food is the conduit, but feelings are also a conduit, right? Mm-hmm. Like they both kind of represent that. They're just like a symbol for like something bigger almost. So
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. No, well, like you're so right. Like that stuff about feelings, like when I different times where I would be like, when I say this to people now, they're like, I don't believe that ever happened. And I'm like, believe it. Like I was miserable. But when I was like a really angry person, like the anger was actually kind of a symbol of all of this other stuff, like all of these other things. Like it wasn't the thing. It was a symptom of all this other stuff. And then like all these things that I thought were like my personality were actually just this cobbled together set of coping mechanisms. Mm. So like I didn't even really meet myself in a kind of genuine way until a couple years ago. And so in a lot of ways, I still feel really amorphous now and I'm still getting to know myself, which is, I don't know. I hope that never ends actually.
Oh, wow. So are you also getting to know yourself as a creator, like as someone? I know we use the word chef a lot, but mm-hmm. people who are not necessarily have come through the restaurant world, we sometimes get a little weary about the term chef. But mm-hmm. how are you getting to know yourself as a chef, as someone who creates? Who cobbles together all of these different ingredients to make something.
When I left MasterChef, I lied down for like 2 weeks straight before deciding what to do next. And then I started staging in a restaurant that I really admired. And that was really eye-opening for me in terms of seeing that all of these ideas that I'd been having for years and kind of like squishing down as like not important or not that interesting or too basic or too this or too that, like they were being executed really successfully and happening like in restaurants that I admired all the time. Something about that was really validating and special. So I was there for, I guess, almost, yeah, over the course of like 4 months, I guess. And that gave me so much confidence. And I mean, that's something that I feel like I'm kind of always working on now, like as a kind of career changer where I'm almost 40, going into a new field, like imposter syndrome is like my BFF that I've I've tried to just make friends with and be like, oh, you again. Right.
I love that. Take away the scariness by befriending it. I love that.
Yeah. And just be like, I hear you, but like, I don't believe you anymore, actually. Like, you can make all the fuss you want, but I'm going to go ahead and try this idea. Like, just kind of acknowledging the parts that feel scared, because that still happens to me all of the time. And then finding ways to continue acting anyway.
I love that idea of, like, making liars out of your demons, right?
Yeah.
Like, as someone who has also like had some, well, I've had like, you know, I've suffered some like anxiety and that kind of thing, and I mm-hmm. sometimes have to tell myself, I'm like, anxiety, you're a liar, like mm-hmm. and you can't, and if you believe the lies that these different amorphous things tell us, mm-hmm. it prevents us from creating and manifesting our best lives. So I love what you said about imposter syndrome, because I think especially in our industry and I just think it's something that like in our industry is very rampant, and mm-hmm. I love that you have made a liar out of imposter syndrome. And I think anyone that has like a culinary dream or a dream to work in food, that might be step one. It's like
yeah
defeat the imposter syndrome?
Once I started kind of seeing my like fear-y and imposter syndrome-y things as like scared kid me, like trying to keep me safe, and like being able to kind of like the more I fight with them, you know, being like, just shut up. Like if I go the shut up route, like it does not work. They'll just kind of become even more persistent. But if I kind of can, I had to do a lot of work kind of around reparenting myself and self-nurturing. If I can kind of listen to those scared parts and just be like, I totally get where you're coming from. Also, like, I'm much more capable now and I can totally take it from here. Like, almost like, I don't know, the way you would, like, a scared kid or something. Because, like, that's on, like, that's what we are. Like, when that stuff comes up, it's usually, or for me anyway, I don't want to speak for everyone, but for me, it has to do with all sorts of kind of, like, deep-seated fears around, like, feeling unlovable, not good enough, and, like, you don't matter. Right. And by being like, okay, scared voice, you totally matter. I hear what you're saying. I know you're just trying to keep me safe. Like, for me to be able to, like, when I honor it in that way, it then gets much more like, oh, okay, cool. Right.
I do want to tie this back to food, because I want people to understand, like, when you are creating, like, some recipe for a judge on television, right? You want to knock them. You have to do something that's different. You have to stand out. And in order to like be comfortable in that place, like what you're talking about defeating the self-doubt is just a mountain you have to climb over. So, and I think that's like, even with like, Ethan can probably speak to this with like becoming an entrepreneur and starting a business. Like, these are all things that we just like, it's so relevant. And especially when you're just, when you want to do something that no one hasn't done, like no one has done before, because no one has put these ingredients together the way you're about to, or no one has like successfully done, like, I don't know, single origin spices from farmers in far off places to like
yeah! a
big enough scale to like spice up a nation. Right.
Well, it's, it is so incredibly vulnerable to admit that you want something. And I didn't get that for so much of my life. So I just conditioned myself to not want things. And when I got to MasterChef, it was, I had gotten to a point where I was like, I really want this. And I think I can win it if I just, if I take care of myself. And it's so vulnerable every time you start a business, every time you put something on a plate, every time you share food with someone, you're sharing this part of yourself and trusting that you know what you're doing. Like creating the conditions for you to feel like safe enough to do really wild things. Like that's so revolutionary.
I think there's this idea that whether it's coming up with food, especially among professional chefs, or starting a business, that they have to be intellectual exercises. And, and obviously there is some element of that, but so much of, I think, what actually appears to the audience, whether it's a customer or a judge, is the expression of that emotion that has been channeled through the food or through the company or through the book or through whatever the creative project is. And at least in my experience, it's very easy to lose sight of the ways that our food that my food at least is channeling my emotional state at the time that I came up with it or at the time that I cooked it. And I think that deserves more attention and more credit.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, I really feel like you can taste feelings.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back with more from Jennifer Crawford.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for those of us running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, which means the way they shop for food is changing.
I've seen the shift happen at Burlap and Barrel, the single origin spice company that I founded with my friend Ori Zohar. Because we have an online store and we can ship orders, it's a safe and healthy way for home cooks to get spices delivered right to their doors. Now people are more curious than ever about the ethics and sustainability around food, and it's a great opportunity for us to talk about Burlap and Barrel's social mission while growing our business so that we can continue to support our partner farmers around the world. If you run a restaurant, farm, or other small food business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery so you can keep your customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its order hub lets you manage all of your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/yfood.
And we're back. We're joined this week by Jennifer Crawford, food creative, winner of MasterChef Canada, all-around fascinating person. Jennifer, before the break, we were talking about the combination of, or sort of the ways that feeling is expressed in food, and how you have handled ups and downs in your own feelings related to your food career. Let's talk about a little bit more of the logistical side to decisions you've made recently to move to rural Nova Scotia to rebuild or renovate a farmhouse. What's that journey been like for you?
This journey has been such a joy and such a surprise, multiple surprises as we continue to go. If someone had told me this time last year that this is what would be happening, I would have been just as like delighted and confused to hear as anyone else. I really am not someone who has things like business plans or five-year plans or like any of that stuff. My brain kind of just doesn't work that way. I think this is one of the things that really discouraged me from, well, like among all of my own like personal failings that were keeping me from changing my life. But like one of the things that kept me from kind of changing career was this feeling like I had to have a really good plan. I had to have it all mapped out about how I was going to work towards certain goals. When now, like where I am now, I can look back and see like, wow, I was, even though I didn't have those things, I actually was on that path the whole time. It's just that my journey doesn't look like those kind of more structured ways of going about it. It was kind of through a constant effort of, I tried to make time every single day for doing the stuff that I knew I wanted to be doing more of. And that was my main, like, I don't know when that decision got made. I think like right after I got sober, I was like, I need to do the things that keep me well and give me joy. And all I did was cook. And even for the years leading up to that, when I wasn't so well, like cooking was still like such an anchor in my day. By the time, well, like the finale for MasterChef aired last year on June 10th, which meant that on June 11th, I got a check for $100,000, which honestly is more money than I ever thought I would see in my lifetime. I was never great with money. I never really had it, so I didn't have to be. And then when I got it, I would just spend it for, well, like a whole bunch of reasons. Like my retirement plan was to die early for most of my life, which I have now reconsidered. That will not be the case, hopefully. But it was kind of through that, like I just kept doing things that I knew I wanted to be doing more of every day. And then it was like we had outgrown our little pot there in Toronto. Like it felt like we were a plant that had like outgrown where we were, and we needed so much more room to do all the projects that we kept thinking of. Like we wanted to be able to cook for people more often. We lived in a basement apartment. It was maybe 400 square feet for the two of us, and like both of us working from home. And there just wasn't a space to do these things. And I wanted to grow food, and I wanted to live like literally closer to all the farmers who were making food, and just be more a part of a like rural community. And be part, honestly, too, like be part of like a rural queer community. I never thought I would live in Toronto for as long as I did. I was 12 years there. And coming home to Nova Scotia and living in a rural place, it has provided, I don't know, every day is just more projects, more things to think about. This house was built like 150 years ago. So there's always like little projects that, well, and big projects to be doing. And honestly, it's like thinking about the days where we're going to be able to host people here again, that make it feel so nurturing and exciting. And yeah, getting to share some of that through the internet is obviously like such a joy as well. But yeah, thinking about the times where we'll be able to fill this place with like people and food and laughs and music and dancing on the table and just having weird times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are some of the more surprising aspects or things you've encountered since moving to Nova Scotia? What weren't you expecting to happen that has happened?
I was not expecting to have as much opportunity as, I was not expecting to have people be so supportive of my moving here. Not in a, like, the local community is wildly supportive. We have people popping by all the time. It's so nice. My career has kind of really taken off since being here, which honestly, I was like, wow, you're leaving like Toronto to move to rural Nova Scotia as someone who literally just changed their career. Like, this is either going to really work or really be a way to sink it. And it's turned out that it kind of made it really blossom. Like, just so many interesting remote opportunities that have happened, and like online creation that I hadn't been doing as much of before, but it just, like, where I'm not in the city, like, I am sharing so much content online all the time just to connect with people. And then, yeah, stuff like the book manifested out of that, and like my show with Extra, and like some other partnerships that I can't quite talk about yet, but I'm really excited about. Really special things happening. And so it's like, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It, like, on paper, it felt like the more career dampening move, but it turned out to be the actual total opposite of that. Just, I don't know. There's something about having the clarity. I had no clarity like before I got sober, honestly. And I'm just so grateful to have some, to be able to know when something feels right. Like, I didn't even know what that felt like until 2 years ago. And then to be able to trust it and follow through on it. That's something else.
And what about your connection to the restaurant industry and the restaurant scene in Toronto that it sounds like was at one point pretty important to you?
Yeah, well, I hadn't eliminated any options. Like, I was pretty open to like, oh, like maybe I'll do something here. I went to a bunch of different like information sessions about that kind of stuff. There's a really amazing person named Ivy Knight, who runs this series called the Industry Sessions. And they do sessions across the states as well. But there was this one about like how to start a restaurant in Toronto. And it was all these industry leaders giving like very real talk about that. And just being able to tap into that kind of brain trust was really amazing and let me know immediately what I didn't want to do. I feel like that was like the first kind of 4 months after the finale, is kind of methodically figuring out what I definitely didn't want to do. And it's like, it's just good to try stuff. And then like, I'll never be wondering like, oh, what if I had worked in a restaurant in Toronto for a while? Like now I know. And like, it wasn't going to work for me. Like everything. But like the things that I learned as I went, like, man, I can rip through a prep like anything now. Just skills that I didn't quite have before as a home cook. Like, it was all part of the process, even if it wasn't the path we ended up taking. It's like the way with like relationships, like longevity isn't necessarily the marker of success, just like the depth and like how much you got to learn. And I feel like all my weird little career moves last year were sort of like that, where I got to learn a lot about like myself and what worked and what didn't work. And then, yeah, this path really works so far.
That's such a great point about how we define success, right? like the example you gave about relationships, right? It's not, because I think when people think about like, what's a successful relationship? Like, well, one, where the person's still in the relationship, right? Like the duration of time.
Yeah.
Whereas you're kind of like crystallizing on this like other way to define success, which is the depth of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, looking forward, and I know you seem like you're really awesome at being present, so you can choose to not answer this question.
Oh.
but you know, like, you've got the book deal, you won the TV show, you've got all this writing stuff happening. What how do you define success now at this point? Like, what is it, like, what are your goals that you, if you want to share, next, that would make you feel like, okay, and that next thing, that was a success also?
That's such a lovely question. And I'm, as someone in recovery, I have to be so careful about taking things a day at a time. Otherwise, I do get swamped and I start living in all my worries of tomorrow and like regrets of like stuff that I've done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it can make answering stuff like this really hard, but it, like,
well, you don't have to answer it. I just wanted to pose, yeah, because I like how you phrased, the measure of success. And I think go ahead.
I literally said out loud to my partner yesterday, like, it feels like all the stuff that I had been working so hard for, plus more that I could not have even imagined since like 2 years ago, has come true. So like, what now? Like, we just keep going and keep figuring out, like, every day what feels like a nice day, what feels like a, like, I don't think about success too much because I'm like, admittedly, like, really not money motivated. And like, that is often the way of framing things. It's like, if I get to have a day where I get to spend time with my dog, we get to go to the river, I get to make some food, I get to like take actions that feel like they better the community and, you know, like work towards justice for everyone. Do I have the time and energy to do those things and nurture my relationship, like, with myself and with my partner and with my family? Like, that feels, you know, that feels like it. That's, yeah, that feels like it. And it's not, I spent so much of my life achieving at trauma and like achieving at my pain and like achieving at my feelings of like unworthiness. Like, if I get this scholarship, if I get this award, if I win that powerlifting competition, if I like win, I don't know, like this grant, like those were the ego kibbles that I thought were like propping up like the scaffolding of my being. But yeah, they're not. Like, life is so much more than those things. So now, like, the achievements are almost more like just a byproduct of keeping well and figuring out how to, I don't know, have a nice day and make it more possible for everyone to have nice days.
Yeah. That was beautiful.
Oh, okay. So I was like,
I can hear them through the computer. No, it really was. Ethan, should we do some rapid fire? Or
yeah, there? Sure. Jennifer, I don't think we warned you. I forgot to warn you. We we like to end the interviews with a rapid fire kind of fun question segment.
Okay.
You ready?
Oh my gosh, yes.
this one isn't exactly rapid fire, but I came across it when I was doing some research on you and your background, and I'm so curious about it. What is Moon Mist ice cream?
The best ice cream. It comes from Nova Scotia. I think about it all of the time. It is banana, grape, and bubblegum. It is aesthetically and just culinary wise beautiful.
How do banana, grape, and bubblegum go together flavor-wise?
Better than you could ever imagine.
Do you have any recommendations for trying Moon Mist ice cream outside of Nova Scotia, ideally in the United States or in the New York area?
Oh, I am not aware of any suppliers in the United States of America, but I do have a recipe on my website if anyone wants to give it a shot, because I really feel like it should be everywhere.
All right, cool. Valerie?
What food trends do you find exciting right now? You can also answer the alternative if any food trends annoy you right now.
Because everyone's at home, I am loving feeling like all of my friends have their own cooking show right now, like tuning into IG Lives, which I didn't even know was a feature that existed before, but getting to see people just like cook their breakfast, maybe sit down and enjoy it. It is such a joy, and I hope that continues well into the future.
Great answer. I'm just going to insert my opinion.
Please.
I've been loving it also, because it's like, you know, the news and Netflix, they are only going to get you so far. And mm-hmm. I think it has been just like lovely, just like seeing just like people out here just sharing and getting a little snippet of like people's inner home life, which is nice. So
yes,
that's and a it all trend,
and it always includes like a bit of like what's happening in the world, because people will jam about like what's gone on that day, and like you get see their feelings and their food. Like that's what could be better,
right? Ethan, one last question.
Yeah, what did you eat for lunch growing up? What was a regular lunch for you as a kid?
My favorite, like there was no better day at school than when I had a crispy bacon and pickle sandwich on white bread.
Oh, I love it.
I would look so forward to it all morning, and I would usually eat it like, I don't know, at recess and then be hungry the rest of the day. But
who came up with the crispy bacon and pickle combination?
That was me, like grade 4 Jennifer. I don't know how that happened, but then that was like my, I was allowed to get the pan real hot, like to cook bacon. That was a really big deal, so that I could have it for my sandwiches the next day.
That's awesome. Jennifer, tell our listeners where they can find you, where they can find your work, where and when they might be able to buy the book. Any other information you want to share?
My work is on Instagram at jennifer.e.crawford. Also, I have some stuff on my website, which is jennifer.e.crawford.com. That's not as frequently updated. My book will be coming out in fall of 2021. And yeah, I'm currently working on setting up a little tiny restaurant.
Wow.
Restaurant is like a bit of a stretch, but tiny private dining experience in the ice house on our property. I've just started sourcing a table. So it can be like a little, when dining out is kind of stressful right now, this can be like literally just a table for you and your bubble. And yeah, have a feast and almost
in
like
the ice house.
In the ice house, yeah.
Of course, the ice house. I love it.
Yeah. Just chill.
Right. And as always, you can reach me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram.
And you can find me at Foodie in New York on all social and my blog, foodieinnewyork.com.
You can get in touch with us, whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org, or follow us on Instagram, whyfoodpodcast. Thanks to the Red Crickets for our theme song, which is called Blind, and to Jess Krenjic for being our, as always, awesome sound engineer. And most of all, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a fascinating and enlightening and poetic interview, unlike, I think, any other we've ever had. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was such a treat.
All right, see you all next week.
Why Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.